Okay. Okay, let's look. We're on page 70. That's from last time, I think. Some of you might have. 70, 71. And you just got now the rest of the pages. We're learning from Eretz HaTchiya. Perek Gimel and Eretz HaTchiya. I know I have to get back to Eretz Chafetz soon, but this is so important, it's so basic, this Torah. And Eretz Chafetz is only a tiny little bit of it. And Rav Aviner's commentary is very, very helpful. So it's been a little bit choppy. I'm sorry I was away. And one of the great chidushim of Rav Kook, like all chidushim in Yiddishkeit, it doesn't mean that it's something that was never before. It means that it was something that was all of the time there. It's just that it needed to be redeemed from a sort of a place of being concealed or hidden. And that's the the sugya of the klal, or klal Yisrael. Many of us have been learning of Kook's Torah for quite a few years already, and we know that even Eretz HaTshuva, Tshuva is a very personal thing. Tshuva is very personal. But even Eretz HaTshuva, Rav Kook saw Tshuva in light of one's connection to Am Yisrael, and it's part of Am Yisrael, and the Tshuva of Am Yisrael. When he was once asked about the difference between himself and the way of the Baal Shem Tov and Chassidus, Rav Kook, there are a number of differences. Rav Kook is primarily rooted in the world of the Vilna Gaon. Of course, he's very influenced by Chassidus, but he's a Talmud of the Talmidim of the Gra. But he said that the main difference between himself and the Talmidim of Baal Shem is that whereas the Talmidim of Baal Shem were more focused on the redemption of the individual and his own connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his sugi in this world was Klal Yisrael, was the Jewish people. That doesn't mean he didn't speak about the individual. He's the thousands of Torahs, he's talking about the individual. It's all over. But the Inyan of Rav Kook is Klal Yisrael. It's Klal Yisrael. And what we've been learning here, at just where we're up to now on page 70 of Eretz HaTchiya Perek Gimel, is how only the Jewish people contain with their very existence, the essence of who they are, the toiv hamusari hamuchlat, that absolute tov. And because of that, our commitment to ben adam l'chaveiro, to improving society, to morals, to an ethical life, our commitment to that is not something which is artificial, difficult, painful. By the Ummah Sa'ilam, Rav Kook described very, very clearly how, by the nations of the world, their effort to adjust to the Torah's perspective of what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong, has been very painful and somewhat unsuccessful, because it's not the first language; it's the second language. And you know, as long if you're born someplace, the language, even though you've picked up the language of your host country, it's with an accent, and there's a certain awkwardness in speaking the new language. The language of Musa. Don't confuse Musa here. When Rabbi Cook uses the word Musa, he's not talking about the Musa yeshivas. He's talking about Musar. That language of Musa is the first language, is the mamalashna of the Jewish people. Because when you cut open a Jew, and when you cut open Am Yisrael, the etzim of Am Yisrael is toiv hamuchot, it's absolute good. It's absolute good. It's Avraham Avinu. That's who we are. There are many Jews who are behaving in a way that's inconsistent with that, and the things that we ourselves do that's unbecoming of who we are. But the etzim and the toiv hamuchot, that's where the entire world bases its definition of what toiv is upon Torah's Moshe, upon Tanakh. That's our mamalashim. That's our first language. So therefore, you'll find that even Jews who are not observant over the years, they become detached from a life of Torah mitzvahs. But when it comes to the toiv, to that toiv hamuchlat, to giving and to doing, you know, even if you go to a hospital someplace, it's not Mamish in New York. You look at the names, Goldberg and Steinberg and Katz and Schwartz, and the other names. The toiv of Am Yisrael, the toiv hamuchlat, the musa ha-toiv hamuchlat, that's the nature of Am Yisrael, is something which is the mamalash, it's our language. And therefore, a Jew, even if he's detached from Torah mitzvahs, intuitively doesn't feel that there's anything unnatural or difficult about being good. It's the etzem of who he is, and it's the etzem of the entire nation. And that's what he writes over here. That's on page 70. If you don't have it, I'm sorry, it's hard to listen to Rav Kook. We're not going to do that, all the notes. We'll just do a little bit of the notes. Hinenu choshim bekirbenu kulanu. You have on page 70? Hinenu choshim kulanu bekirbenu. These are of Cook's words, the dark words. Hinenu choshim bekirbenu kulanu. We feel within ourselves, all of us, feel within ourselves, klolus umaseinu. Klolus umaseinu, we feel that connection. Klolus umaseinu, like learning in the Chalban, on Tuesday nights, we feel intuitively that connection one to the other. One of the chevra sent me a video clip of, you know, the husband and wife Shira and Amichai, that they were injured. She lost another her baby. You know what I'm talking about. Last week, it's such a sweet couple. Any of you see the mom is the sweetest couple. That Baruch Hashem, there looks like they're going to be okay. But they lost the baby. But he was speaking in a very, very simple and clear way. This, I think his name is Amichai, right? Is that correct? So what Amichai was saying is that what it brought out so clearly, you know, this little child that lived just for 3 days, for 3 hours, I don't know, whatever it was, the child brought out such a connection between one Jew and another, and he says that everybody, he said that we don't know what to do with all the things that people are doing and coming to us. He said, Chasidim and Charedim and not religious, and religious, and Datilumi, and Ashkenazim, and Sfardim, that people can't do enough for them. And that at the end of the day, that feeling of all Jews being brothers and sisters is very, very strong. There's nothing that you have like that by the nations of the world in such a way. Chasham kulonu, bekevenu kulonu, klolus umaseinu, we feel intuitively, klolus umaseinu, bekerev am Yisrael kichlal, the care of Am Yisrael Kechla, like we're learning in the Chalban, that it's all different organs of one great, big Kla Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael. Shatoiv on page 72. We'll come back to the note a little bit afterwards. Just look on page 72. I think you just got those. On page 72. I'm sorry, it's a little black in the middle, so maybe a little bit of the sentence is missing. I apologize. No, it's missing a little. Sorry. Yeah, shatoyv. We feel bekirbeinu klolus umaseinu. Shatoyv hamuchlat, hatoyv el hakol lazoyz roi lichsav. that it's fitting for us to have this great longing for absolute toiv. Toiv al hakol, complete good, absolute good. Hatoiv, now we'll see in a few minutes how this comes to Eretz Yisrael. That's the subject of this Torah, we'll see. Hatoiv hamuchlat, Rav Avinir explains. Hatoiv hamuchlat, zemasha kosem lanu. What appeals to us, what speaks to the Jewish people is hatoiv hamuchlat. Nothing less than absolute good. That's why Jews are behind all different movements, even though there were crazy things that went on with communism and socialism. But why is the Jews are behind all these things? Because those Jews believe that the absolute toiv is to be found in communism. Okay, it was a terrible, terrible mistake. But what is it about communism that so appealed to Jews? You have to understand that. Because they saw in that an opportunity to come to a toiv hamuchlat, that everybody could have a good life and it could be fair and whatever it is. But it all came from that musag of a toiv hamuchlat, all the movements of modern times, and ancient times as well, to improve life, to make life better. It all comes from Am Yisrael. Zemash HaKaisam on Iraq, Ayod on Niyam Ushar. And only with a toiv hamuchlat can the Jewish people feel complete and fulfilled and happy. While Yisoid Zer Roili, Rav Kook says, while Yisoid Zer Roili Asid Mamlocha, Ulahanhig Politica. Again, at the time of Rav Kook, there was a lot of tumbling about whether or not there was going to be a state. He never saw the state of Israel. But the beginning of such an idea of Jews being in control of themselves, of course, that was unfolding in his time. And therefore, Rav Kook says that Al Yisoid Zeh, that if we are able to have our place, we have to build our nation upon the Yisod, a kingdom that's built upon this Yisod of HaToiv HaMuchlat. Lahanhig Politika, Rav Avinir explains, HaMedina Oysa Anirotsum LaHakim, if we want to establish our own place, a state, it must be established first and foremost ala toiv hamuchlat. I don't know if you have any other country that, you know, when it comes to, if there was a boy or a girl who was killed, a soldier, then the family doesn't send the second. You know what the rule is? There's when it comes to the Eretz Yisrael, by Tzahal, if one of the kids was killed, then they're not the mothers, because of the mothers. They're not mechuyif to send. They're not mechuyif that the other child should afterwards enlist. There's a sensitivity. There's a toiv that is, and that's something which obviously every soldier counts so much over there. It's not like it's a big place and there's so many soldiers, but the toiv hamuchla dictates such a thing that these parents lost the child already. So not to put them into such a position. Rav Kook says, "Vanaroyim b'psareinu." We see this with our flesh, from our flesh. Rav Avinir says, "V'chashem zos mitoch pnimis atzmi yuseinu," from within ourselves. Shahatoyv hamuchlat. Rav Kook says, and he explains, "Enu ze hamumtza aydei bnei adam." Tov hamuchlat is not anything that human beings created. Absolute good is not something that's defined by human beings. Their definition of good changes all the time. What's good? What's right? What's bad? It changes all the time. It's not something that human beings created, the Tov HaMuchlat. There's Tov in the world. There's lots of Tov in the world. By the nations of the world, there's lots of Tov. But Tov HaMuchlat is something that comes from Hashem Yisbarach, not from a human being. Absolute good. Absolute Tov. And there are many things that from the perspective of Tov, from the perspective of Tov, would seem to be conflicted by the Tov HaMuchlat. For instance, the question that everybody always asks is, how could it be that Amalek should be wiped out, right? Men, women, and children from Amalek have to all be killed. That's like the number one question like that a high school kid has, or even adults have, that how could it be such a thing that the Torah would say such a thing, that every single Amaleki has to be killed? How could it be? And one feels intuitively that his definition of Torah is conflicted by the Torah's definition of Torah. Rav is the Torah saying, Zahatov HaMuchlat. Zahatov HaMuchlat. There are many things in halacha like that as well. Many, many things in halacha that are counterintuitive, that that would contradict. The Maral in Be'er Gadol speaks about a number of them. He gives examples. And he shows, and the Maral spent a lot of time on this, especially in Be'er Gadol, to show how that once we understand what Tov HaMuchlat is and the Torah's way of looking at something, then we'll realize that that's the Tov HaMuchlat. That the Torah's definition of Tov is the Tov HaMuchlat. And that even though it seems from the perspective of Tov as is defined by the world that that's nicer or looks better, even in Maral goes into Pratim and Halacha. I'm giving things examples about Hashabbos Aveda, certain things, when they're Ptum and they're Chiyuvim. Maral talks about any Pratim and Halacha that on the surface you would say, nah, that's not so nice. It's not so nice. And the world's kind of idea of that, or how that should be interpreted, it's nice. It's better, it's nice. The world now talks only about everything being fair and good and kind and nice, and everybody's happy and everything is good, right? So, Lemoshel, how would the Torah address the question that's a hot topic right now? I get my news from my wife, so I'm assuming this is accurate. How would the Torah define this question right now, that the mayor of New York City is very upset because it seems that in the top high schools of New York City, that the Chinese, the Orientals, are taking over a lot of they're like the new Jews, you know? So the Chinese are hardworking and smart, and they're taking over. So the mayor of New York City is very upset about this, and he feels it's unfair to minorities. It's unfair to minorities, that the minorities there should be a quota of minorities. Quotas never worked for us, you know that. So there should be a quota of minorities. So everybody's going, Meshuggah, it's gewaldig, what a gewaldig, a beautiful thing. This is Tov Mamish. It's Tov Mamish. How would the Torah address such a question? From the perspective of Tov HaMuchlat, there's something that's called merit. Like, if you deserve it, you get it. If you don't deserve it, you don't get it. So, being granted acceptance in a certain school is not a matter of chesed. It's a matter of earning a place in that school. If you're a minority and you're being mistreated or prejudiced, that's a terrible avla. Whether you're Chinese, you're black, you're a Jew, it's a terrible avla. Right? In the early part of the 20th century, 20% of Harvard, they were Jews, even though they're like 98% of the people they were trying to fight against it. And now these questions are coming back all the time about quotas. So there are people who are screaming that the toiv, the absolute toiv hamuchlat is that you have to be fair to people, and that why shouldn't minorities be able to get into the top, you know, Stuyvesant school, Bronx, whatever, why shouldn't they get into the top schools? It's not fair. It's not fair. And there are people screaming, it's a low fare. But I'm just giving you, it's a silly example, but it's something which is a very pressing thing in society. And there are people who are screaming that the toiv hamuchlat is to decide who gets into these schools based upon color or race or religion, and not based upon qualifications. And the world is people, many, many, many millions of intelligent people are screaming that the mayor is right. Do you see that the world's definition of what's toiv is so skewed, is so perverted of what's toiv? And therefore, all of these questions, especially when it comes to medical ethics, and when it comes to all kinds of shilas, what is considered to be toiv? So to take a person to end his life because he wants to end his life, in the eyes of many people in the world, that's toiv. Person says, I don't want to live anymore. So euthanasia was also the hot topic back in the late 70s, early 80s. And there was a doctor in the Midwest that they found was helping people end their lives early. And he, for many people, he was a hero. For other people, he was a rasha. The perspective of the Torah, as the Radbaz explains, is that a person's body is not his own property. It belongs to the Bayer, it belongs to the Kadosh Baruch. It's a different perspective. It's a slight little difference. Your body, your life is not your own. It's Hashem's box. But it changes the whole game, right? Life is not, it's not yours. The Baruch Shalom owns you. He has bailus. You can't make a decision. I'm not happy with my life, therefore I want to end it. Or I'm in a lot of pain, therefore I want to end it. How the poskim talk about these things, about whether or not I have to save the person who's terminally ill and in terrible pain. That's something else. But we have sugis in the Gemara. We have poskim, we have Shulchan Aruch. But the Toiv HaMuchlat is completely different than how many, many people in the modern world see Toiv HaMuchlat. Toiv HaMuchlat is absolute Toiv. It's not that life is in your own hands, even though they would say that's really nice and it's good. The person's unhappy with his life, he should be able to take his life. But the Toiv HaMuchlat says it's a whole different definition of what life is. Life is not yours, the Baruch Hashem is bailus over you. It's a halva, it's a loan, and your meshub is still to the owner, and you can't do whatever you want with this chayfetz that's called the human body. You can't, the same way you can't be chayvel, you can't take something and pierce your skin or to injure yourself, chas v'shalom. But in the eyes of the world, a person has bailus. Understand? It's my body, why can't I do what I want? Or what do they call the freedom to, you know, women with abortions, choice, right? The pro-choice, right? That's what it's called, pro-choice. The other side is pro-life, right? Pro-choice. But the whole svara of pro-choice is a svara akuma. But in the world, akuma means it's perverted, it's crooked. But in the world, in many, many people of the world, that's their base from which all the discussions of Tov come from that mistaken perspective that life is something which, that life inside the woman is her bailus. It's my body, I do what I want with my body. It's a toast, it's a complete, even though the world says, that's good. And almost every page of Shulchan Aruch, you'll come across something that if you would present that to somebody that's not familiar with Halacha, would say, that's not right. Or that's not nice. That's not nice. Or that's not good. And a lot of what the morale does in Ber HaGadolah is how he shows us a way to understand Toiv HaMuchlat. Now, the only way you could really understand Toiv HaMuchlat is by not only learning Torah HaNigla, but by learning Torah Pnimius HaTorah. And that's what we're going to talk about in the note in a minute, about the whole Inyan of Klal Yisrael from that perspective of halacha is not as clear as when you enter into Pnimius HaTorah, where there's the interconnection between one Jew and another. That's in the world of Pnimius. The same way that in the world of Pnimius, your body doesn't belong to you. In the eyes of the world, your body belongs to you. Who does it belong to? It's my body. Why can't I do what I want with it? And all they ever say is, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else. I could decock that. It came to the point that if you're killing a fetus, you're not hurting anybody else because it's my body. Right? Uber Yerachimai. The baby is part of my body, so I can do what I want with the baby. And what's the Bar Yoel, what's the Bar Shalom coming in here and saying something which is not nice? Killing a Malik is not nice. The Toiv HaMuchlat is killing a Malik. Now people will say, but that sounds like jihad. That sounds like what the Nazis, Yimach Shalom, said. The killing Jews is Toiv HaMuchlat. They said killing Jews is Toiv HaMuchlat. Now, obviously, when you're up against this issue of a Malik, you're going to have to cross over into a world of Amunah. And then the others will say, well, that's what the Muslims do. And that's what the Nazis did. They had the Muna in Toiv HaMuchlat, being an Aryan world, being a world that's free of Jews and of Gypsies and of homosexuals. That was their vision of Toiv HaMuchlat. And how does one address these issues? Does one need Bechlal to answer these questions? But these are the issues that they come up all the time. Rav Kook is explaining that HaToiv HaMuchlat, not the one that's created by people, Hu HaToiv HaElokei HaNitzchi Shebe Metzias Kula, is only the Tov HaElokei HaNitzchi, the eternal Tov HaElokei, godly Tov, that's Be Metzias Kula, that's in all of creation, all of reality. V'hinenu Shoyef Hem Tamid Lotzeis Bekvaisa, and our entire longing is to follow this, to go out in this way, to live this way. Rav Avner says, "Not move on prati mashpachti kilati haicharati. Not only in terms of the individual or the family or the community." A little bit, Rav Kook says, "Move on li'umi uklali, as a nation, as a people." So Rav Avner says, "Kach sha'om kulay oisa goy tzadik shememunim." The Jewish people are called in pasuk goy tzadik shememunim, a nation that is righteous, a faithful, righteous nation. He bonui Look at footnote 121, right underneath. I'm hoping that everybody here has learned the Kuzari. It should be on your basic reading list of Torah classics. So, if you haven't, then try to find the time. I know there are a lot of things to do, but try to find the time to learn Kuzari. It's a very basic, important sefer, and it's a Pesach into the world of Pnimius also, and certainly into the world of Maral and Rav Kook. But Kuzari was a very big part of the curriculum in Rav Kook when he started the yeshiva, and still is, to learn Kuzari. So, you know how Kuzari was written. Rabbi Yehuda Levi wrote it in the form of a fictitious conversation between the king of the Khazars, or the Kuzarim. There was such a person. There was a mysterious kingdom that converted to Judaism at the time of the Rishayim, the early Rishayim that converted. And there's a lot of fables about it and questions what happened to these people. That's not for now. But based upon that that shmur that Rabbi Yehuda Levi heard, and the Jews knew of at that time, so Yehuda Levi wrote about a make-believe, it wasn't a make-believe, there was a king of the Khazars, but Kilu, there was a conversation between the Chavir, the Chacham, and the king of the Kuzrim. Now what happened to this king, and how did these people come to convert to Judaism? So you remember that he had a dream, right? He had a dream. He was trying out, he was looking for the truth. He was a very, very elegant person, this king, and he was looking for the truth. So he tried finding the truth among three people. He sought the truth in the three sources of truth that were popular in his time. And that's why he went to speak to a Christian theologian, a thinker, Galachal. He went to speak to a Muslim, a Chacham from the Muslims, and he went to a philosopher, right? To speak to a philosopher. He never had a havamina to speak to the Jews, because the Jews were so downtrodden and miserable and broken and beaten and so on. He was no havamina to talk to the Jews. So he wasn't settled or satisfied with what he was hearing in his conversations with these people. And then he had a cholam. It's interesting that that's how Kuzri begins, or that Yehuda Levi began with this hisgalus of a cholam, of a dream to this individual. So b'dom l'kach, look at footnote 121. B'dom l'kach matzanu es melach Kuzar ha'cholam cholam, that the king of the Kuzrim had this dream. Again, we don't know. Rabbi Yehuda Levi made that up as a way of introducing the truth of Yiddishkeit, so that the king had a dream. Hamivate l'maisis asher hischoilo b'seich nafsho pnima. And that dream was revealing to him the deeper part of who he was, as dreams will do. B'cholam nemalai ki kavanaisav rutsiyos achmaisav eni rutsiyos. It's the famous line from that dream that the king had, where he was told in his dream, kavanaisecha rutsiyos, that your intentions are terrific. You're looking for the truth. Achmaisecha eni rutsiyos. But what you're doing, the way that you're living, is not good, is not acceptable. Kavanei Secher Ritzuyos. So you could say the same thing about the mayor of New York. I mean, that would be a big compliment. I'm not an admirer of him for many reasons, and I'm happy he's not our mayor over here in the five towns. But you could say Kavanei Secher Ritzuyos, his intentions are good. Wants to help minorities, that's for sure a nice thing, to help people that are underprivileged or have difficulties helping themselves. It's certainly a chash of a thing to help people. But masach, and in the end, you have all the Chinese, whatever. There was a fellow called me last night to ask about a certain therapist. He's not a psychologist, he's a social worker, and he accepts insurance, and this person can't afford to pay for therapy for his kid. So he wanted to know if I heard about this therapist, and I said, this social worker, I said, I heard about him, I don't really know, you have to ask somebody else, I don't know, maybe he's qualified, I'm not sure, I heard his name. but I don't know people that they use them. I just heard the name. So he told me that, he said to me that he's nervous because he found out that this person earned his degree online. He earned his degree online. Right? So I said, I don't know. Whether that's legitimate or not legitimate, people are doing that. I don't know. I mean, the whole thing to me seems to be a scam, honestly. It's a way of places making money without having buildings or teachers and so on. But that's not the point. The point is that he was questioning the credentials of this person because of his background in education. So why should a person who's qualified and who's worked so hard not be allowed into an institution of a higher institution of learning where he's proven himself to be capable? So would you want somebody? So what he's saying is, I don't want this guy that got a degree online like telling my kid how he should live his life. So I said, okay, I don't know how that works, these online, I don't know. But how would you feel if you found that like this guy is like operating on you, and he got like 1,000 breaks getting to medical school, and he was at the bottom of the class, but they lifted him up to the top of his class because he's a different color, right? And you're lying there on the table, and he's opening up your heart. You'd rather get somebody that, like, you'd like rather get the Chinese guy in there. You know what I'm saying? No? He said, I don't mean to be unfair to any minority, but do me a favor. Give me the guy that had straight A's, you know what I mean? I don't want to deal with this. I remember there was a guy I went to high school with. His name is Jay. This guy never took an honest test. Every test he took in high school was stolen, was cheating, was... He had such hamtsaot of how to get... I don't know what happened to him. I didn't see him any years, and I heard that he was a heart surgeon. So one of our old friends said to me, do you hear that Jay's a cardiologist? I said, yeah. I mean, the only way that would work is if there's another body on the next table, and he's looking in, like, to see, like, what this guy's, the next doctor on the next table is doing, because he never did anything honest, as far as I recall. Maybe he did tshuva. I'm just saying that in those years of high school, this guy never took a test on his own. He was always handling and stealing with the regents, what was going on, to go find them in the Beis Yaakov parking lot. They're buried, and he started a whole movement. The guys, there were 100 guys that went in the middle of the night to Beis Yaakov and Kew Gardens to find the regents that were buried under a tree. It's like crazy stuff. I mean, the regents in advance of them being given, you understand? That somebody found them and they stole them from a school, and this guy was like, this guy was the operator behind it. And then he's your cardiologist. No, it's a little bit of a, you get a little bit nervous. If you're on the table, you get a little bit nervous. But Blasio, he could sit in the fancy office and say, yeah, Yadim, Yadim, this guy should be this guy should be that. Chaim Vilamovitz, right? He wouldn't take a guy like that. I remember there was that old show, you remember Archie Bunker, All in the Family? So he hated Jews, right, Archie Bunker. But whenever they needed a doctor, he said, he's got to have the name like Goldstein. Only Jewish doctor, the only one with a Jewish doctor. The whole Musug is so corrupted. And everybody says that, Taiva Mukhlat. What does it mean, moral equivalency? The palace in the newspapers, the way that it's worded, that because of the unrest in Israel, there were two Palestinians and two Jews that were killed. How they word these things, right? Two Palestinians and two Jews that were killed. Kilo, like there was like an accident or something. Doesn't say Befeirish. Doesn't say Befeirish. There were terrorists that murdered innocent people. And that whole sugya of moral equivalency brings this out in the clearest way. That what's Teva Mukhlat? The only difference Teva Mukhlat is from the Rabbanu Shlom. So he says in the Kuzri, so he had this dream. Melech Kuzar chosh b'pinimiyus ha-kiyeshna Teva Mukhlat. Now, what was bothering the king was that after listening to the drushes or to the presentations of the Muslim, the Christian, and the philosopher, he felt inside of himself, that's what the dream brought out, he felt in his pinimius that there's good stuff over here, but it's not it. It's not the Teva Mukhlat. That's why the whole world has opted for the Teva Mukhlat to use Tanakh. Yeah, but then they just twist it around to make it work for them. But they all say, that the Bible is the Sherish, and that the Baruch Shalom is the sherish of your existence, not the maskim. So he felt b'pnimius o kiyesh no tov mochlad. And without revelation, without Torah Moshe, without Har Sinai, a person can't uncover the Tova Mukhlat within himself. He can't get to the Tova Mukhlat within himself. He'll get to his own definition of Tova, again, whatever makes sense to him at that time. Later on, his conversation with the Chaver, which means with the Yehuda Levi, with the Chacham. So the Chaver, the Tzaddik, explains to him, Ketzad Aksil Enu Masuga L'Chalik Trufas L'Chol Bnei Adam. How a fool can't give medicine to people. A fool can't give out medicine. That's another example. How would you feel if the guy that worked in the pharmacy and you're getting pills from him, and the guy looks at the pills and he says, "No, I think these are what you need." I think, I'm pretty sure. How sure? He says, "Well, I averaged 50 on my exams in the school, so there's like a 50% chance that it's the right pill." It's ridiculous. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Levi is saying. A ksil, a fool, is anemasugal achalik trufas l'chol bnei adam. A fool can't give out medicine to people. Acheres who olu laharug is kulim. He's going to kill everybody. Kach adam en yochel agil eloika elo acher ak b'nesivim shenikvu ayidei reversal. Therefore, the only way that you can get to the absolute truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using the pathways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught and that he revealed through Nevuah, that he made known to us. He made these ways known to us. Klemer. HaMelech Akuzri Hirgish Ki Yeshnam Arachim Muchlatim. The king of the Kuzrim felt intuitively that there are absolute values. There's absolute right and wrong. He felt that. Yeshnam Arachim Muchlatim. Not relativism that we spoke about a few weeks ago. That there are no Arachim Muchlatim. There's no Arachim. There are no absolute values. Because we felt that there are Arachim Muchlatim. Because Hashem wired us like that. Lo ke'elish anigvu aidei yitzirei enosh. Not like the values that were created by human beings that were created. And like Derev Anishlo. B'dvarim shalefaneinu kaisav harav. What we're learning now, Rav Kook is explaining, kikach chosha ha'uma ha'yisraelus b'chlalusa, that the Jewish people as a nation feel this intuitively. Kol zman shinen menes la'atzmeyusa v'enim ha'ke achem. The condition, of course, is as long as we're faithful to who we truly are, and we're not imitating the other nations of the world. And this Torah that we were learning, Rav Kook is explaining how our problem with living in Europe for so many years is that we began to imitate. We began to imitate the nations of the world. But if we're faithful to who we are, and to Teres Moshe, Teres Shevach Sav, and Teres Shevach Peh, so then Kol Zman that we're in that place of Nemonis to who we are, so we feel like the king of the Kuzrim, intuitively what's right for the Jewish people and what's wrong for the Jewish people. Alkein ahava helukis vadvekis belukim hilonu dover atzmi. Therefore, ahava helukis, godly love, the love that a Jew has, the capacity to love Hashem, to love other Jews, to love other human beings, to love, and dvekis belukim, and dvekis Hashem, hilonu dover atzmi. It is a dover atzmi. It's not something, a second language that was learned. It's not something that we picked up. It's a davar atzmi. That's how we're created. Ashal yuchal lihimochek lihishtanus. That can't be erased. That can't change. Zehu tivai shel am Yisrael. It's the teva. It's the nature of am Yisrael. It's the teva of am Yisrael. There's a lot of good notes, but it takes too much time. The ones from before. Let's look a little bit at 124. Am Yisrael Am Baal Ashtarikikus Atzumah V'Nairah La'Toyev L'Kiyamuchlan. Rav Kook is explaining that the Jewish people are a nation that are filled with a tremendous hashtaggah, because for this tov ha'eloki ha'mochlat. Zuhi ha'skula ha'yisraelis. That's what defines, that's the essence, the nature of the Jewish people. And he brings in the letters Igris, Rav Kook writes, Etzam ha'chayim ha'yisraelim, hem klulim rak ben nekudas ahavas Hashem esbach. Etzam ha'chayim ha'yisraelim, the essence of Jewish life, is klulim rak ben nekudas ahavas Hashem esbach. That is the very essence of the Jewish people, love of Hashem, the Shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, the love of the Jewish people, that was strengthened in us, was revealed in a very powerful way at the beginning of our history when we were children, meaning at the beginning of Am Yisrael, like the Ovis and the Imohos and so on. And it goes with us forever and ever. In the Eris he writes, Atzmus ha-chefetz shel ha-yoyis toiv la-kol lo-y shum ha-gbalo v'olam klal. This longing to be toiv la-kol, to be good to everybody and everything, without any restraints, without any limitations, bein bekamus ha-nitovim ben be'chuso shel ha-toiv, quality and quantity and so on, that's the inner seed, the garin ha-pnimi of nishmosa, of the soul of the Jewish people of Knesset Yisrael. And Ayis HaKadosh, ha-dvekes b'Hashem, zosi ha-tshuka ha-yoyis ha-tivis la-odom b'Yisrael. Dvekes ta-Hashem is the most natural tshuka, longing of a Jew. Tchunas ha-um lo-chala es ha-tshuka ha-zoyis li-yisoyt chai ha-lum Yisrael. Now this tshuka for Hashem became the basis of our national life, of how we live as a people, and how to establish kehilos, how to establish communities, how to establish a nation. Al pi goyrola ha'histori, ein hatshuka shel advekas amochlatis v'lekim chaim bor ein soif dover she'ev shel yos chilufa b'teva ha'havai, and that can't be exchanged or substituted with something else in nature. Kishem Sha'onu Mukhwachim Lichyos, Rav Kook writes the same way that a person wasn't given a choice to live. Lios Nizainim Mizgadlim, and in order to live, you have to eat and so on. Kach Mukhwachim on Lios Dvekim Hashem. So it's the natural need of a Jew to be Dovuk to Hashem. Now, if he doesn't identify that because he wasn't raised that way, then he becomes Dovuk to something else. Jews are always Dvukim to something. It could be to Ra also, it could be to bad stuff too. But a Jew is a baldvekas. Every one of you and myself are all dvukim to something. Hopefully it's the good things in Takash Baruch Hu. But a Jew is not like a Jew is not living a life that's chilled or casual and so on. Everybody's dvuk to something. Now, even if you're like a crazy, you know, baseball fan or a football fan, but a Jew is dvuk. The teva of a Jew is dvekus. Over time, and the way he was taught, he doesn't identify that with Yiddishkeit. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he could become dovuk to some other thing, which is very often, as I said before, the hospitals, Jews are dvukim to good causes. And Jews are behind good causes. So crazy percentage of Nobel Prizes are Jews, right? The Jews are 0.0002, whatever, in the world, in the history, and to over 20% of the prizes. Because Jews are dvukim b'toiv, meaning to find out how to help people, like medicine, writing, and whatever it is. Jews are dvukim. It's usually b'toiv, but sometimes it's not b'toiv. But when a Jew is bad, it can be very scary. Because his nature of a Jew is very extreme. He's dovuk. Because he's looking for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but if he doesn't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, then he becomes dovuk to other things. But the tev of a Jew is dvekas. The Teva Jew is the Vegas, and he just tries to substitute it. It becomes Dovuk to, can become Dovuk to all kinds of crazy things. Become Dovuk. Who is it that said? Forgot who was it that said. I'll remember in a minute. It wasn't a firm person. It was a brilliant person. I don't remember the second, who said that nonsense is nonsense. Narishkeit is narishkeit. But when you study it, then it becomes research. Like you're saying that, like, you could major in movies in university, right? Isn't there such a thing? I'm sure there are majors in every university in America, mm-hmm. on movies and the right and art, entertainment, movies. So what this person was saying is that nonsense is narishkeit is narishkeit. But it's an interesting thing that when you study it, then it becomes research. It becomes academia, right? Damis is, it's narishkeit. But you could make the narishkeit into something which is kilo. So you spend your whole life researching the Three Stooges or Laurel and Hardy, and he writes a thesis on Laurel and Hardy. And the young people don't know Laurel and Hardy. So he writes his thesis on the Wizard of Oz. So it's a movie. So, but when you write a thesis on it, then you become a professor and you're a researcher. Your whole means you have a degree in narishkeit. So your whole life is narishkeit. But since you're researching this and you make a comparison between the Wizard of Oz and Sound of Music or something, and Dorothy was more choshev than Julie Andrews, I don't remember what her name was. So then you wrote a whole thesis on this. Then you became like a world respected thing, and they have a whole subject, and they have a thing, and you looked at like you're some sort of a accomplished person when you spent your whole life researching something that doesn't exist. You're talking about the Wizard of Oz. Even they found out at the end of the movie there's no such thing as a Wizard of Oz. I mean, even in the movie they found out that there's no Wizard of Oz. And this shite is writing a thesis on the Wizard of Oz. There's no Wizard of Oz. They found that out that there's no Wizard of Oz. But he's writing a thesis on the meaning of the Wizard of Oz, whatever it is, Christ is writing on every subject in the world, and every narishkeit. But the narishkeit becomes like research, becomes chashuv. That's how it is. Every stus in the world.
Dr. Seuss.
What?
Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss.
Don't make fun of Dr. Seuss. That's very, very harsh.
I know Rebbeim, they use it.
Why not? That's something else you could use.
They use it.
You could use to teach something.
Yeah.
I once, when I was many, many years ago, I was teaching a class, and I had a group of high school. I was teaching the girls. This girls' class, I was supposed to be teaching them like Hashkafe, Machshav, and it was a very, very weak class. And I tried, Sosemis and Ramchal, it wasn't going. It was like, lipstick mirror, it wasn't going. And I'm crying my heart out, Rabbi Nachman, like I'm taking out like all the heavy good stuff. And like these girls are just, it's not happening. So I did something very radical. At that time, this is 30 years ago, 35 years ago, Dr. Twersky, Rabbi Twersky, who was then in Pittsburgh, you don't have to talk about Avraham Yeshua.
Charlie Brown.
Right, so he wrote two books on Charlie Brown that were not Jewish. He didn't put anything Jewish in them. He's a chacham. And he took cartoons, he was friends with Schultz, and he took cartoons from Charlie Brown, and he used each cartoon as a way of developing a certain inyan in improving one's life, self-improvement and so on. And I don't know if you can get those anymore, I don't know if they're around, but they're just gewaldig. I'm just gewaldig. And so I ordered a bunch of them, and I said to the girls, "We're doing Charlie Brown." Oh, Charlie Brown! Now we're talking. So I love Charlie Brown, and now the young people probably don't know what that, you see, but back then Charlie Brown was still like a big fashion thing. So I love Charlie Brown. We're Charlie Brown, and so then I started working with them on Charlie Brown, and then we did Charlie Brown, and with the different inyanim that he discussed, and then this Fasemis or Tzadik. And got the same thing across. But it worked through. You could use Dr. Seuss, you could use Charlie Brown. Dr. Seuss is a murdic genius of a person. Murdic. There are very many interesting things that are brought into there. Of course you could use these things. That's not what I'm talking about, research. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm making fun of is something else. I'm not talking about using. That's a chokhmah to bring to the... I'm talking about Stam, the people that... They make their lives, in the end of itself, something else. I'm not talking about using whatever we can to help people, to teach. You could use anything to... Somebody was just telling me last week. I never heard of this before. I'm sure you heard of this. I heard of this last week. There's something called horse therapy. Mm-hmm. So when I heard it, I thought someone's... Horses are upset, like someone's talking to them. I don't know, I thought, like, because I know, my sister told me that such a thing with dogs, that they take them to a therapist. There's such an idiot. Yeah. In case your dog is having problems, there's...
Sounds like a good business idea.
What?
Sounds like a good business idea.
Are you kidding? There was... We were just going to Los Angeles last week, and we had... we were brought there by the organization. They were nice enough to put us into business class. So it was Mechai. In the seat in front of us, there was a guy, and next to him, there was a dog. And this dog was business class. Listen, not only was he business class, it was a funny looking dog. I tell you the truth, the dog behaved better than most of the people. Didn't make a... First I thought, what's this going to be over here? There's a dog. My wife is afraid of dogs, and I was afraid he's going to... Because my wife is right over there, he's going to get up and start barking and making faces. I don't know what it's going to be. You know, and you go to business class to be with a dog. So it was a mother that was a strange-looking dog, and people coming, taking pictures and selfies with this dog. Everybody's taking pictures. So turns out it's a famous dog. It had a strange circles around its eyes, and everybody's saying it's a Target. There's a store called Target. And this is a famous dog. You know what I'm talking about? They advertise with a dog.
Yeah.
That's like the thing, the mascot of a... And they were, and the, this guy is in charge of this dog. And he was taking the dog. They were doing some filming, and he was taking the dog. And people, everybody's coming over and taking pictures with this dog. And the dog was like so uninterested in the people. It was so fascinating to watch. I was standing up and watching how the people going over with this hunt, with this dog. And the dog was like this, like you know what a shite you are? I'm a dog. Taking like this. The whole thing was so funny. It's so funny. My wife took a picture, not a selfie, she took a picture to show the kids. And I saw the dog, and I said to my wife, I sat down, I said, you know, there's a dog in front of it. So I said, it's a modern, it's a strange dog. It has kind of a pigmentation, you know, on the face.
It's not painted on?
What?
It's not painted on, it's real?
So my wife asked the guy, he was a very nice guy, the trainer, the one. So my wife was talking to the guy, and he said, no, it's a makeup. It's makeup. I thought, like, wow, Boschel made such a dog like that. That's a perfect thing around its eyes. I was, you know, you're going to give a whole drush on this dog that Hashem's made such a dog. But it turns out the dog, like, is just an actor. You know, the whole thing's a fake, and that's it. It's all sheker v'chazer, the whole thing. So there's dog therapy. Horse therapy is something else. You know what horse therapy is? Yeah. They're finding that they're helping a lot of kids, and it works. They're helping a lot of kids that have inyanim. I don't know how or why Dafka horse, why that is. It calms them down. It helps them with their inyan. I don't know. It's a gewaldige chachma that people are able to do these things, that they're able to find. That's not spending your whole life researching a horse. That's spending your whole life trying to figure out how to help people. And you're helping people by using a horse. It's a tremendous mitzvah.
You can do this. Wallace, I'm saying you care people who like had a trauma, didn't want to, like, you know, connect to people. So the horse, you take care of them, you care for them, and you love. You open up to, you know, open to therapy, basically.
Yeah. So there's such an Indian. There is such an Indian.
The army in Israel, they give the PTSD people dogs. They have a whole dog therapy.
Yeah. Okay. So there is such a thing, you know, in the world. There is such a thing.
Nowadays it was Mr. Ed.
Huh?
Mr. Ed was therapy.
What was therapy?
Mr. Ed, watching Mr. Ed.
Yeah, okay, he was different. He spoke. How can you compare? Don't tell me he didn't speak. That was one of my favorite shows. Mr. And just finish the sentence. Hadvekas and Advas, Mimena Bukhol, Maloinish Masenu, Mukhrachas, Hilas, Halechas, Mispatachas, Banu. Rav Kook says that this dveikus b'Hashem And to be dovuk by Hashem means to be dovuk by toiv hamuchlat, that this dveikus by Hashem is something which must muchrachas ilios haleches mispatachah, it must develop within us. Haleches umisamekes, it must become deeper and deeper, behergish with our feelings. Haleches umischaveres bahakara usuna, must become clearer to us. It must become something that's part of our lives that we live with. Okay, Bez Hashem, we'll continue next. Good Shabbos.